Hi, I'm Allison.
And I'm Larissa. We're two working moms
and real-life friends
on the journey to improving our family's health.
We're digging through the facts and fads around living a cleaner, greener lifestyle
with plenty of cocktails.
Whether you've taken the plunge like Larissa
or just a little crunchy curious like Allison, this podcast's for you.
Welcome to the Crunchy Cocktail Hour.
Hi, guys. This is Larissa. And as always, I'm here with Allison.
Hi, everyone.
So today we've got a really special treat. We've got Tammy Astorino here with us today, who's the co-creator of Rise Gathering, the thing we affectionately call Lady Camp. And she's here to tell us all about her life hacks, whether it's for yourself, for your family, for your health. So really looking forward to that. And Tammy is a Jane of all trades. She's a yoga instructor, an educator, a plant-based food enthusiast. So we're really looking forward to that. Welcome, Tammy.
Hi, I'm delighted to be here.
And what are we drinking with today's topic, Allison?
So we are lucky enough to have some fresh-made kombucha from Tammy. And kombucha is one of those like amazing beverages. Because not only is it delicious, but it has all these health benefits. And I think you were saying it's like gut health, it helps with digestion.
What happens when you mix it with alcohol?
Well, then it becomes even more delicious. So that's what we experimented with. So I've got a bit of, I'm going to call it like a kombucha Negroni. We'll call it that.
Okay.
But it's gin, Campari, and kombucha with a little splash of lime.
All right. Well, cheers.
Cheers.
It's delicious.
Good. I'm glad.
So what's interesting is we've talked so many times about Rise on the show, and I've blogged about it, and you know, we've talked about our personal experience attending, but I would love to hear your thoughts before we officially start into our topic about what it's been like creating this for others.
Sure. I mean, it's a perfect lead into what we're talking about today, because for me personally, it was a career change as I'm in my late 40s. I did not think I would be starting a new business and creating a movement and a community. But after I started doing it, I realized it was something I wanted to do full time. And I left my other consulting work that I was doing with nonprofits. So we can do more on that later if you want, what it's like to take a leap like that. But how it's been in terms of Rise and Rise Gatherings, a few things. One is the women who have become part of our community, like the two of you, who have come either to our annual weekend in May or to our day retreats, meeting them, hearing why they're showing up for themselves, what was compelling to them about taking some time to care for themselves and beyond care for themselves, like just, you know, getting their nails done. Mm-hmm. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but really caring for what's underneath mind and body as well as spirit. So meeting the women and then seeing the small and large transformations that happen either because of a piece of knowledge that they gained or an experience that they had that shifted something in them or a person that they met. So witnessing that and feeling like we've laid the fertile ground where they can grow and truly rise is, that's what it's all about.
Well, and last year was fabulous. So of course we're coming back, but it sounds like you've made some really incredible changes this year that you're super excited about.
Yes. When that's the first thing when I saw these two lovely women, I took out my iPad and said, I have to show you pictures of where Rise Gathering annual weekend is in 2018, because you kind of have to see it to believe it that a camp can be this nice. So last year we were at an overnight camp in the Poconos, and it was fine and it was campy. But one thing that we really wanted to do was take our accommodations up a notch. So one major improvement to this year is that we are at a camp called Trails End Camp, where they have a lot of weddings and corporate events. So they are really, it's beautiful. The landscaping is beautiful. It's on a pristine lake with white Adirondack chairs everywhere. And there's heat in case it's chilling. And there's air conditioning in case it's hot, and people are going to breathe a deep sigh when they feel immersed in nature, but also feel really like they're in a beautiful space. And then the other thing is we took what was already good, and I think we made it even better. The team of facilitators we have this year are what I think are some of the best, most passionate, most skilled, most knowledgeable women in our country, in North America. One of them is coming from Vancouver. And the high vibe experiences and knowledge that they're sharing with women isn't something you might access at your local yoga studio or workshop. So they're more unique, but these women, the hardest thing is going to be picking a workshop. And the saddest thing is going to be when they end, because you're just going to want to spend a day with all of them. And it's so exciting, the team that we're bringing together.
Yeah, and we can't wait. So Rise Gathering Weekend is May 18th through May 20th, and we want you to join us. So exclusively for Crunchy Cocktail listeners, you can get $50 off your ticket price by using the code Crunchy, C-R-U-N-C-H-Y, at checkout at risegatherings.com. And we're going to put a ton of important details about Rise Gathering in the show notes at crunchycocktailhour.com, but come join us and we'll rise together.
So Tammy, thank you so much for being here with us today. Maybe you could just start us off by telling us a little bit about yourself and about kind of how you got here. You mentioned career change, life change. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. I like to say that I feel like my whole life actually led up to what I'm doing now, which I think a lot of people feel. Mm-hmm. Women have to constantly reinvent themselves, not just professionally, but personally, because life keeps changing and each stage you adjust and recreate yourself. So I think it all started when I was a girl and feeling a disconnect around being told you can do anything you want, but actually not feeling that. And being somewhat of an alpha girl where on the outside everything was perfect, but feeling some angst on the inside, and my friends too. And so that gave me a passion around women's issues. And I studied feminism and psychology in college. And for 10 years, I was a guidance counselor.
Oh, neat. Oh, wow.
And my favorite thing to do was actually bringing groups together, because what kids came to me for, the same kid had just walked out the door talking about something similar. So I really was focused on creating groups of kids, whether it was around social issues or family issues, bereavement, you name it. And that started my passion for the magic that happens when you are in community and you tell your truth and you support someone when they're telling their truth. And then the next phase of my career, which came after I had children, was working for a nonprofit called Moving Traditions, creating a national program to empower girls.
Oh, wonderful.
And from there, I started working with another nonprofit called Interfaith Family that supports interfaith couples. And with all these experiences, it was that same thread of empowerment, that not telling people what to think, but rather to think, to get in touch with their own voice and to raise that voice. And when they do, giving the other people in that circle, whatever the circle was, permission to do the same.
And it sounds like community is a bit of a common thread as well, which is so, and a huge part of what you're doing with Rise.
Yes. And personally, so I'm a seeker of community, but meaningful community. I'm like an introverted extrovert. A lot of people can relate to that.
Yep.
I don't really like superficial outings, but I really love meaningful ones. So Rise Gatherings is an organization that creates experiences to unite and empower women. We do that in day retreats and our annual weekend that you're coming to. And it's a platform not for the creators, but for our 20-some facilitators to share experiences with women, and women showing up together, shedding that layer of whatever superficiality they carry around and getting real and having this unified experience. That's the magic.
Well, and there's like the kind of figurative version of that. And then the literal, we literally no makeup, no showers, no. Just looking a hot mess. And it really does just sort of take you down that layer and make you feel open and just yourself, which is so cool.
It's true. Makes you more childlike. I feel like you stop thinking and you just start moving.
Literally playing in the rain.
Yes. It's much more playful. Yes. At the place where we are this year, right in the middle of the campus, there's swings. Just like you kind of happen upon them. And another place, there's a ping pong table. And I was like, this is perfect, because you tap into that part of play that we get so serious about everything that gets lost and we still have inside of us.
Oh, that's, what a fantastic career. And I like how a big focus for you has always been empowerment of women and creating that community. And I think that's a big part of what drew us to you. But I think beyond that is one of the things we wanted to talk to you about today is healthy living and how to create healthy and empowered women. So what made you passionate about?
So that's my personal story. So I gave you the professional one, because that one comes out so easily. But the personal story is in a short version that when my son was one, he's 14 now, I was in a terrible car accident, had horrible headaches. And all that doctors could tell me was, I'll prescribe another migraine medication. And I was like, this can't be the rest of my life.
Yeah.
So I started seeking more resources. And this was really before the age of podcasts and, you know, all the information that's available to us now. But it started me on a path that had me making some major lifestyle changes around the way I ate, the pace that I was going, exercising, all of that. And 5 years later, my husband had his own health crisis where his back was terrible. And he started seeking more information, and particularly around inflammation. Mm-hmm. And so I was eating whole food, plant-based, but not that healthy because my kids were little and it was more like whatever I could find. And then
scraps,
my husband came
mostly
along.
Survival mode.
But it was vegetarian. Yeah. So I was being, you know, I was being on this path. But then my husband came along, and everyone has to come to this in their own way, which is part of, I think, the beauty of our marriage and why people say like, wait, weren't you like this for a while? And then David, yep. But he discovered that changing his diet gave him a lot of relief from the pain that he was experiencing from years as an athlete. So we both, he upped our game, because when a couple does get in it together, everything.
Absolutely. Yeah. You really need that support. So if somebody else is like, well, we could just order this.
Right.
But if you've got that partner.
He raised our game, and I dove in deeper to wanting to live a more optimal life, mm-hmm. in terms of health, in terms of joy, and also because of the work that I do. Sometimes when you're in this work, you can be preaching it, but you're not doing it for yourself. Yeah. And my, you know, personal mantra that sits on my computer is that I want to cultivate my own light so that I can share it with others.
Oh, I love
that's
that.
Beautiful.
And it's for real, you know, mm-hmm. I don't do it every day, but what helps me be more assured on that path is life hacks. And that's, you know, what I know when I talked to you all about topics, you're like, yes, life hacks. We all want the hack.
Yeah. I think the quick and easy way to make quick improvements. So what does hack mean to you?
Okay. So I feel like it is a misleading term. It's kind of clickbait. You know, we all want to know the 5 hacks for getting whatever the thing is.
Losing 5 pounds by Tuesday.
Right, exactly. But there really aren't shortcuts to health and happiness. People know that. It's misleading, but there are hacks. Hack sounds like you're cheating, but it's the opposite of cheating. You're setting yourself up for success. Mm-hmm. You're being proactive. So you're taking steps to ensure that you're going to do that thing that you are striving to do as part of your bigger journey, whatever that is. So if it's that you want a more peaceful home, you want more connection with your children, you want to be taking better care of your body, your spirit, all those things, there's so much information available to us now. Mm-hmm. It can be overwhelming. And what I have found is that if I hook into both the words that I remind myself of, as well as these hacks, which we're going to talk about, that ensure the success.
I like that.
And
who doesn't want all of those things? Better connection,
sure.
Healthier living. Well, if you're listening to this podcast, you're taking a step in the right direction.
Absolutely.
And I think what's beautiful too is that, you know, there is so much information out there, and we might hear some of these things that you're going to talk about and they might work perfectly in my life. And I might think, oh, I could easily incorporate that, versus for you, Allison, you might say like, that would never work for me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it does. If it's something that you can more easily fit into your life that betters it just that one little notch, I mean, it truly is a hack.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And as we were leading into this topic, one of the things I was really excited about is you share some hacks around connection to your family and to your kids, and even really little kids. So I'm really excited to dive into this. But I think you had a couple of places you wanted to start. And the first was really around health, because that's kind of where you started in your journey as you were thinking through how to get better with your migraines. So maybe we can start there.
Sure. That is really where it started. I went to see a holistic doctor, and one of the books that he recommended was a book called Green for Life. It's a thin little book, and it was about drinking green smoothies.
Oh.
So remember, this is 15 years ago. So, or 14 years ago. So green smoothies weren't on the menu anywhere.
No.
And I, along with that, I also read the book, The China Study, which was what guided me to want to eat a more plant-based diet. But so the smoothie thing is basically, in a nutshell, that we all should eat more plants.
Okay.
And by that, I mean fruit and vegetables. You, whatever diet you, and I don't want to call it diet, whatever eating nutrition,
we say dietary lifestyle.
I love that. Whatever dietary lifestyle you subscribe to, there's one thing that they're all in agreement in, whether it's paleo or vegan or, you know, whoopy doopy.
It's my favorite.
You need to eat more plants. We need more fiber. We need the nutrients. Okay. So one way to get them, because that's not always what you're quick to reach for, or even to get the amount you need, is to drink smoothies. And particularly smoothies that have vegetables in them.
Okay.
Green smoothies have leafy greens, which are hard to eat a lot of and to digest properly. You know, it's exhausting to eat a kale salad sometimes. Like, enough with the chewing.
I know. And kale is one of those things where it's so big amount of quality and or quantity in a salad that's almost too much. But I love me a kale smoothie. So.
Okay, so here's the hack. You ready?
Yeah.
So I was making them regularly, and then it's a pain to pull out the frozen fruit and wash the kale.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I'm supposed to be putting a nub of ginger in there and turmeric. And who has time for that in the morning?
It's true.
Not me. So I started making smoothie bags where I would take the gallon Ziploc bags, or I shouldn't say it past tense, I still do this. I take the giant Ziploc bags, the gallon size, I line up, let's say 5 to 10 of them on my counter. I get out all my ingredients and I shop for it.
Yeah.
So I buy all of the frozen fruit. I have some ripe bananas. I have a lot of leafy greens, and I even have the ginger or the turmeric or whatever thing I want to put in there. And it's going to take half an hour, and I prep these smoothie bags, handfuls of greens. Then I make, maybe they each have a different theme. Then one gets strawberry, mango, and ginger. Then another few get the blueberry and the little piece of lime. You put them all in the freezer. And then when it's time to make your smoothie, you open the freezer, you take out the bag, you dump it in your blender, and you have a smoothie.
Smart. And that
way you enlist the help of your family to do like an assembly line of this.
I'd be lying if I said yes. That sounds adorable.
It would be really adorable. All right.
Yeah,
we'll add that to the next time.
In the summer, I have a farm share. So when I come home with all these leafy greens, it's like right away I'm making the smoothie bags. So, and it's also, it's a great thing. A lot of times people buy produce and don't get to eat it. But if you have these frozen bags, then, those blueberries that are going bad, or even the kale that you thought you were going to make into a salad, we'll just get it into the smoothie bags.
I love that. And I've been meaning to get Claire on salads or in smoothies more.
Mm.
Because she's really good at eating her vegetables, but I feel like a smoothie would be fun.
Absolutely. So maybe, little kids love things with a straw.
Oh, yeah. Anything with a straw.
And if you can't get her a drink, put a little bit of whipped cream or non-dairy whipped cream on top, and then it looks like a more enticing smoothie.
Dessert. Yeah. Kale dessert.
Yeah. And truthfully, when you freeze greens, I think they taste better in a smoothie because the whole thing gets thicker.
Oh, true. Well, kale already makes it so thick.
Yeah, but it gets like that, you know, that rich and cold consistency as opposed to, it can taste a little like a blended salad.
Yeah.
And we've talked about before, I think on another episode, about, you know, one opportunity that you have, you know, vegetables and fruits kind of go in cycles of season. But one thing that you can do is you can always buy it in season and freeze it. And it's in there forever. Yep. And then you've got that like crisp season fruit or vegetable.
Yeah. But you can buy frozen kale and frozen spinach.
Absolutely. You can
And the nutrient density in frozen foods, they say, is even better than because it hasn't traveled.
Yep.
So.
Oh, I like that one. All right. Using that one.
Yeah.
What else have you got for us?
Okay. So more in the kitchen around the same idea. I mentioned nutrient density. So maybe you've done this. You read an article or somebody about something that's really good for you. You go and you buy it, like mulberries or moringa powder or hemp seeds or chia seeds. Or you get the idea. Things that you should be eating more of. And you go home and you make something with it and then you put it in your cabinet. And then 6 months later, you open your cabinet. You're like, oh, right, camu powder. I'm supposed to be putting that in my smoothies. Mm-hmm. So that was me. I mean, I had so much of that stuff because I wanted more of these things in my life. And whether you call them superfoods or nutrient dense foods, it's real. It's not just hype. You get a chance to eat every day, and what you put in your body. I always like to focus on eating more of what's good for me as opposed to what I'm not eating.
Yeah.
So trying to get the nutrient density, and you can get that with these superfoods. So here's my life hack. So you have to have them on the counter.
Okay.
But you don't want these ugly bags. So I got the ball jars and I started with like four of them, the 16-ounce ball jars. And you can buy those anywhere. But then I bought on Amazon these beautiful white plastic caps that you can put on top, because something about the metal cap on those ball jars just doesn't work for me, and how they like come apart. And you guys are nodding and smiling.
Yes,
like
it's annoying. Agreed. It is.
So they look adorable with these white caps. So I started off with hemp, chia, and pumpkin seeds.
Okay.
And 16 ounces isn't a lot. These are things that typically you would need to refrigerate if you're going to keep them for a long time. But what started happening is we go through them very quickly.
Because they were there. They were available.
They're on the counter. So you sprinkle them on your salad. You throw them on your smoothie. Pretty much any meal, you can put some hemp seeds on. And it just looks like Parmesan cheese. So we go through these things. And then I started adding more. So then it was like the mulberries and the almonds and some of the powders I wanted to be using more. So now we can put this in the show notes if you want. I'll take a picture of my counter.
Yes.
There's truly 10 or 12 of these jars of...
And how do you label them?
I don't, because they're clear.
Goji berries
or goji berries.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty clear what they are.
See, that would work for me with my collagen. I know that collagen is great for me and I've been adding it to my coffee, but it's in a cabinet and it's away. And so then I'll go a week and be like, oh, I completely forgot about my collagen. So I love this one.
It's got to be on the counter. You got to get over the like not wanting anything on your counter, but they're really pretty
in
the jars.
Oh, I got over that baby. Okay, stuff all over my counters.
But they look kind of Pinteresty when you have them stacked up with the pretty caps.
Oh, I like that one. Okay.
And you could label them with a paint pen. It would be adorable.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, I feel like I've seen ball jars now that have the little, you can get chalkboard stickers, or you can get ones with the chalkboard front and you could write on them and change them out.
Ooh, another one I'm stealing. What else have you got?
All right, let's see. Should we
These
move?
These are good. I'm getting all sorts of ideas.
Well, let's stay a little more in the kitchen and eating. One thing, you get a fresh start every morning. Mm-hmm. And, you know, morning routines can be overwhelming. Sometimes you read an article about a morning routine and you're like, wait a second, that'll take half an hour to meditate and do all these things. But if there's one thing that you can add that's just your go-to thing when you wake up, mine is lemon water. I start every morning with the warm lemon water. And in the winter, I add elderberry syrup because it's an immunity booster and it's frankly delicious.
Yeah.
So that's how I start every morning. And then because I eat plant-based, I do a B12 spray in my mouth. But that could be if you're, my husband is a big proponent of mushrooms, specifically the four sigmatic mushroom blends. And you can learn much more about them, but they have all these wonderful properties. He adds those to his coffee. So just if it's the first thing you're going to do before coffee, if you can add hydration with lemon water or whatever it is you're trying to do more of, put that first on your day.
Oh, I love that. And I think you're really big on the lemon water
I'm
as
big
well.
On the lemon water. And I find it to be so important to emphasize the fact that it should be warm water, because I equate it to like nobody wants to wake up and take a super cold shower. So think about just taking a little bit of like slightly warm water. Like that's how you wake up your body, you wake it up slowly. And then there's so many benefits to the lemon. And I actually will sometimes, I'm a big proponent of adding a couple of shakes of pink Himalayan salt to it. So it's great for balancing the pH in your body. And I personally have low blood pressure, so I find it helps with that. I agree, just this kind of, there's something about a morning routine as well that starts your day off right, that you want to do the rest of the day right.
Yeah. Another good thing to add is local honey.
Yes.
I do that especially in the winter just because of allergies. And especially, I feel like allergies keep getting worse and worse every season. So local honey is another good add.
There you go.
Yeah. Great. Very nice.
When you talked about first thing when you wake up, I would also say, and I can't say I do this all the time, but to not have the first thing you do be technology. It's
I'm so guilty of that.
It's really hard. I'm guilty of it too. But the way you start your day is very often the music of your day. It's what stays with you. And while it's tempting to wake yourself up by looking at Facebook or your email, if you can have it be something else, even just staring out a window for 2 minutes, it does put a different tone on your day.
I keep talking about this sunrise alarm clock that I just got. And so it like slowly lights up, but then you can also use a radio as an alarm, but it also has like bird sounds. And so I tried it one day and then I put the volume too low, but we heard like very faintly these like chirping birds. Well, I guess the next time I set it, I didn't realize there was different bird sounds. And so, and I turned it up way louder and we woke up to geese.
Oh my God.
Which my dog would freak out.
Which was not pleasant.
Really loud geese.
And my husband goes, those are not the same sounds. Like, I don't like this.
So now he's not on board.
Now I know that there are many different bird sounds, and we will. Who wants the geese to wake up to?
I know. That's bad. Well, and I have to admit, I'm bad with this as well. I will often check my email first thing in the morning. So the first thing you're doing is getting yourself anxious about your day.
Yeah, you look at it and you go like, ugh, yeah. Like immediately.
And we talked, I think, in an earlier episode, I think we had a guest on about healthy in the workplace, and it's all about setting curfews for yourself with your email. So maybe it's even doing that with technology in general. I'm a lot better at night than I am in the morning.
You're good at this. I am so bad at it. I'm so attached to my phone as if something's going to happen without me.
I feel like, especially when you have kids, it's a moment of higher cerebral stimulation when you're stuck with the mundane, but it actually adds to your stress because it's this adrenaline rush and a distraction. But in that moment where you're like, give me something different than this.
Yeah.
And maybe it'll be something juicy, you know, so it's so tempting to look.
It is so tempting.
I think the last thing I want to say about health has to do, I said that one thing that's helpful for me is to have some words that I return to, a phrase or, right, this is what I'm trying to do to remind myself. And this came from a nutritionist who I once had come speak to a group of teens, and it really stuck with me. It's great for families and individuals. So this is my words around eating. And don't have too much lead up because it's like, it's very simple. Ready? Eat when you're hungry. Stop when you're full.
Yeah. And I think it oftentimes that gets lost with kids because we're like, finish what's on your plate. Make sure you're eating everything that we give you.
Yes.
And that's just such a mindset shift.
Yes. We do a lot of games with kids around eating, like, well, you had a big lunch, or we're having lunch soon. And we do this with ourselves too. Like at 3 o'clock, I'm hungry and I think, well, I had a big lunch and I'm planning a good dinner. You know what? If your body is hungry and you feel cranky, it's time to eat. And I will speak for moms because I am one, that often does happen between like 3 and 5 p.m. And one thing that I've adopted is actually eating a very nutritious snack at that time, like Ezekiel bread with almond butter and jelly. Like I'm not talking a few crackers, like almost a meal. And then if I eat a lighter dinner, first of all, it's more natural. It's better for you to not eat so much after the sun goes down. But I'm not so famished.
Yeah, sure.
And so it's so simple. And also for kids, when they say, should I have a snack? You say, are you hungry? Eat when you're hungry and stop when you're full. Most of it healthy.
Yeah.
I add that in my kids. Like, it doesn't mean candy. But that is this rationalization that we do around eating as if it should fit into some equation when every day is different. Our hormones are different every day, our activity levels, our stress, our everything. Eat when you're hungry.
Yeah.
Stop when you're full.
Well, and it's teaching kids to respond to their own body and their own body's needs. So think about it. Take a minute, take an internal check and see if you're hungry. And then eat if you are. I love that one.
Yeah, because sometimes kids will look at you. My kids, I remember, they'd be like, am I done? And I would say, I don't know. I think before I even had these words, I think I would say yes or no, judging by how much they ate. And I would say, what does your body say? Do you feel full? And then there's less of a...
Sure.
...of someone imposing it on you, because we need that. Lord knows the rest of society is going to tell us something different around eating and messages. So.
Well, and especially for young women.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as they start to think about body image and being able to have a healthy relationship with food is so important. But so those are your health hacks. And where are we headed next?
Let's go happiness.
Oh, I like
because happiness and health actually go hand in hand. So happiness, that word, I don't know if it's really that you can walk around spewing sunshine all day, but I'm talking about joy and a feeling of worth and a vision for yourself when I'm talking about happiness. And sometimes a happy feeling is a byproduct of those things, but I'm really talking about something bigger than that, and that we have to claim for ourselves. And again, speaking as a mom and as a woman, we often wait. We play the martyr and wait for happiness until we're finished whatever we're doing. You know, we're going to do that thing so we can do the happy thing. But the work is never done. So you sometimes don't get to the happy thing, or you hope that someone's going to do the happy thing for you and notice how hard you're working. And no, that's not happening either. Yeah. We need to claim it for ourselves. Exactly. So some of my ideas, I mean, I'm going to do a huge one shout out for you two is podcasts.
I love podcasts. Obviously, so I like podcasts, but I love listening to podcasts too.
Me too. I love yours. Thank you. I really do. Yours is a perfect blend of knowledge and conversation. And in those moments where you're driving in the car, when you're prepping dinner, when you're walking the dog, even when you're getting dressed, you can fill that space with some new knowledge or some conversation that is of a higher quality than you might be having the rest of the day, unfortunately, because these thought leaders are curating incredible conversations about what they are studying and so knowledgeable about. So I will credit my husband's whole transformation was the result of a podcast.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Wow.
Which one in particular?
Called the Rich Roll Podcast.
Rich Roll.
And he has a huge following. And we even went this summer, he planned a retreat in Ireland. And we went all the way to Ireland to go on a retreat with him.
That is so neat.
Because of the influence that he's really had. And it's actually part of my desire to create Rise Gatherings, this idea that someone who you feel connected to, you can show up and have a personal experience with. So that speaks to some of our facilitators. So podcasts, I think, are a great happiness hack. Another one is around friends and plans with friends. And I made a couple new friends not so many years ago. You know, I feel like there's these life moments, these liminal times where you have opportunities to make new friends.
Yeah.
And it happens when you have little kids. But then your kids get older and you actually stop making new friends, other than maybe professional ones, because you're not like at mommy and me anymore.
Sure.
And you don't even walk them into their play dates anymore. You drop them off. It's really different. And so you lose some of that. My kids' friends' parents are my friends and my quote coworkers around parenting. So I made a few new friends, luckily, even though I love my other friends. And these two friends were also seeking some experiences in their life. We all had like young teens. And so we sought out doing different things, going to a drumming circle, going to a create your own. Well, this is how I learned how to make kombucha, actually, was I went to a workshop on it.
Nice.
How to create a succulent garden. Or one thing that is on my calendar to do is go to a Himalayan salt room where you are surrounded by the salt.
Yeah.
I haven't done that yet. So I'm saying all this as an example because it's thinking beyond the mani-pedi or the lunch date. Those things all have value, but to do something where you are raising your knowledge and you're just getting out of your comfort zone, it doesn't have to be a huge thing, but I think it has brought me a lot of joy.
Yeah, there's such value in it. And actually, back in episode 4, I looked back of our of the podcast, we talked about Lady Camp and how that creating that experience rather than just going to a dinner really created a bond between us that was we probably weren't going to get otherwise. It just, you know, having those experiences together makes such a difference in friendship.
Yeah. And I think it's also a great find when you find someone that's willing to seek new experiences with you and be curious with you, because it's a little bit scary to do it on its own. But when you've got a buddy with you and someone that's willing to take a chance and try something that you may or may not like, it's always easier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree.
And sometimes it's finding the friend that isn't in your circle. It's like inviting that person that maybe you wanted to know a little bit better and think, well, she'll go to a drumming circle with me, maybe.
Yeah.
And then the anticipation of doing it is half of it. And then the doing it, like you said, is bonding.
In our Lady Camp crowd, we are as different as can be. And everyone was willing to kind of, you know, it was more of a stretch for some than for others, or certain experiences at the time were more of a stretch than others. But when you've got somebody willing to roll with it, it's really nice.
Agreed. That's why we're so excited to go back.
Yeah. And it's rewrite. It's, this is kind of leads into my next thing. And that's, it's maybe rewriting your story. And you said getting out of your comfort zone. You know, when people, when they first hear about Rise Gatherings, they want to put it in a, they want to put it in a compartment. Like, oh, is that a yoga retreat?
Yeah.
Or is that for, is that for spiritual people? Or is that not actually, no, it's for everyone, for every age and life stage. You can do yoga when you're there, and it's amazing yoga, but you could come and not do any yoga.
Yeah.
People have associated retreat experiences with yoga.
Sure.
But you, if you define yourself as someone who, I don't do that, maybe question that. Like, what's that all about? Because maybe if you tried something new, that getting out of your comfort zone, that vulnerability teaches you something about yourself. As we get older, we get more comfortable with our comfortable things, sure. And then maybe get a little set in our ways. So, but the bigger part of that is having a vision for yourself, mm-hmm. that who do you want to be, and what do you want your story to be? Because you're constantly telling that to others with your actions. It's kind of like what I said about earlier about moms, and that we can tell people a story about ourselves in our own home. And what do you want that story to be? What do you want your, and it's not that you have to be perfect. I mean, to think that, you know, if you're going through your head thinking, uh-oh, my kids think my story is I'm stressed. Well, that's very real, but there's something that where that you can also shift that story by questioning, where does that story come from? You know, what was my mom's story? What was my grandmother's story? What's my ancestral story? And what were the experiences that shaped how I view myself and what this story is? And is that what I want it to be?
Yeah.
And if it isn't, what steps big and small can I take so that I'm teaching my children and everyone around me a different story about myself, and obviously living a different story? Yeah. And that is in our control. The experiences aren't, but what, you know, how we react to it is. And so this is a loftier goal, not necessarily a life hack, but there is the words that go with it. I would say is just like, what's my story here?
Mm-hmm. And am I telling the story that feels authentic to me? This is actually something that I've been thinking about a lot with children as well. I think often we create a story for our kids, or, you know, we continuously tell a story and put them in this.
In the box.
In a box. Yeah. And it's something I've worried about with Claire and her being the allergy kid.
Yeah.
And creating this story of being ridden with allergies. So it's something I'm really aware of with her. And so I think taking it back and focusing on myself is something important too. I love that one.
I commend you for that. It's so easy to do. And we start, you know, oh, my kid's such an athlete.
Yeah.
Or, you know, she's such a caretaker. Or she's whatever it is.
And then it becomes really a self-fulfilling prophecy, or you create something that they don't feel is authentic to themselves.
Yeah.
So it's just interesting. Just something to be aware of in how you articulate who you are and who your child is.
Yeah, I really honor that thinking.
Now, speaking of that, I'm so excited about family life hacks.
Okay. Well, let's start with little kids. I'm past this life stage, but it's such a good stage, and it can be a little more hackable. And teenagers.
They're a little bit more malleable, right?
Yeah, but it's also a physically challenging time and an exhausting time, yes. Frankly. So the life hacks have to be quick and easy and sanity saving to create deeper, you know, more connection, more fun, and more happiness. Mm-hmm. So we'll start with dinner, but it could be, really any meal of the day. For me, that was a stressful time when my kids were little. My husband travels a lot, and just getting them to hold still, you know, let's be real here. So I love dinner games when my kids were little, and some of it has evolved as they've gotten older. But when they were little, it was games that would keep them seated at the table.
Yeah.
So it would be like, and you're nodding, maybe you play some of these. I'd love to hear yours, but it could be the animal game. And so we're just going to keep going in circle, naming animals.
Oh, I like that.
That's it. We're talking preschool years, you know, and we just keep going, and then we switch it. Let's switch it. We're going to do ice cream flavors, and we're going to do whatever, you know, fruits. And the idea is it just keeps them sitting and engaged and a little bit longer at the table. And it's not having them make conversation. Developmentally, that's not what little kids do.
Yeah.
They want to play, and they want to list, and they want to categorize. So it's meeting them where they are developmentally.
But setting the stage for that conversation later in the game.
Exactly. Yes.
I'm going to do this tomorrow.
I know.
Meanwhile, like my kids come home every day and like we get these, our kids go to the same daycare and we get these curriculums that they did that day. And so we see what books they read or what activities they did. And I'll pull it up and I'll say, did you read so-and-so today? And they go, no.
Right.
It says you did. I don't remember. So maybe the animal game would be better. Right.
But the books reminds me, I used to have reading dinners. I'd put books at the table and I would read to my kids at dinner.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Because then again, they're quiet, they're eating, and it was a sweet time to be reading, even though it wasn't the traditional bedtime reading time.
But it also just keeps them engaged. Claire right now is in a high chair, so I've kind of got a captive audience. But I'll read her the sort of log from the day or talk. I'll mostly just talk to her and she'll throw food.
This is a fun one. As my kids got older, so more elementary school age, then we would do games that they would anticipate. So one of our nighttime rituals around dinner was for them to report on their day with a high and a low. Mm-hmm. And then we're Jewish, so we would say a mitzvah, which is interpreted as like the act of kindness or the good deed of the day. And so the reason for adding that one, because a high and a low is a great one too, is it's not all about them. Mm-hmm. And it could be something that they did that day or that they observed that day that was the good deed. So you could do like the rose and the thorn and the blossom. Nice. And so, and the parents have to do it too. Mm-hmm. So this isn't just the kids. And I actually found myself enjoying reporting on my day with those three things and telling my kids more about myself than I would have normally. So we did that one. And then I also, once I think I saw someone on Facebook posted like 25 great conversation starters with your kids. And I printed it out and I cut it in strips and I put it in a cute vase in the center of the table. And so then we would, kids love, and adults too. You can ask people a group a question and they're like, I don't know. But if you cut up the questions and put them in like a cute bag and people take turns picking them,
and
there's something
game.
About it.
Oh, yeah.
All of a sudden, we all have permission and everyone's excited to pick the question. And so that's what we would do. And then I started to replenish the jar. And the questions could be things that are next level. They're not, you know, what was your favorite part of the day? Sure. But it might be, talk about someone in your class that you would like to get to know better. Share something you'd like to change about your school.
A little more specific.
Yes. Yeah. Share a memory you have from a vacation. And I would take the time to make these up, and then you don't get through them all at dinner, but they would be excited when they saw that it was full and we were going to do that jar. It's also really fun when you have company when your kids are elementary age, because that can be awkward for them, like a formal dinner or a new family where not everybody's socializing as smoothly as you might have liked. And then the dinner game with the questions is
That's
a sweet
so
icebreaker.
Fun. We, growing up, we always did best and most challenging.
I like that.
Yeah. And so we actually still do it with my niece, and it's something I plan to do with Claire. But I like the kindness one as well. I won't even try and butcher that word. But I like adding that one as well. So I think I'll add that to the repertoire. What else have we got for the little ones?
So other ways to bring more connection. Bedtime can be a hard time as well. And we have these lofty goals about how sweet it's going to be. And, you know, we'll sing to each other, cuddle. And really, you're just like, go to bed.
It's only sweet for like the first hour.
Right. And then it's still happening. So
this
I never thought about this for a younger child, but I guess you could do it with pictures. But I had bedtime journals with my kids and it was sporadic. This wasn't every night. But where at a different time in the day, I would write them a note in their journal. And it was just a personal journal between us.
Yeah.
And then when they got in bed, they could read it and they could write back. And then they would put it on my bed when they wanted
neat.
Me to read it.
I actually recently saw this for spouses that are having a little bit of trouble communicating. Oh. Doing that with like a morning note. But I think that would work so fun with kids and be such a neat little way to communicate. I like that one.
I also, along the same lines, my dad did this for me my whole life, and I've tried to do it for my kids, is write love notes and just leave them places, just little notes. Like, I noticed how hard, you know, if they leave a, a homework out, then you write a little note on top of it. I noticed how hard you worked on this. You're really
so nice.
Hardworking or whatever. Just I heard you have this coming up today. I love you and I'm thinking of you.
Just something special.
Yes. And my you may notice in my language that it's not always praise, so that we're not creating these praise junkie kids, you know?
Yeah.
They're always seeking that or feeling like that's how they get their love from you, but it's more noticing notes. I noticed when you helped your sister and that made me really proud, or I noticed how hard you worked on this, or I know, you know, so it's more just, I see you.
Yeah.
I see who you are. And
that's powerful in itself.
Yeah. And I know one thing that I have found myself trying to shift to is, and my kids are too young to have the notes, but whenever we give them any kind of praise, like I try really hard not to tell my daughter she's pretty and tell my son he's handsome. I try to tell them that they're smart or funny or something about their personality or something that they do well versus more of an appearance type of thing. Cause I think that's where we gravitate to is kind of what we can see outwardly.
Yep. That's what we've been taught to notice. And it is what you see. I mean, that's how women greet each other. You know, this is pretty, that is pretty.
Yeah,
the kids hear that. Right. We've been very much socialized to do that. But when it's more of a just what you see, it doesn't even have to be an adjective like smart or, I mean, those are great words to describe your children, but it's naming the action and what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And then it affirms for them.
And not the what it means to me. It's the I saw you do this, and this is a wonderful thing.
Yes, and that everything doesn't have to be great. Mm-hmm. You know, you see kids on the playground. The parents are going, "That's great jumping. That's you know, awesome running. All of you know, this superlative and." You're running.
Yeah. I'm with you. I don't,
you know, average at best.
I know there's very different schools of thought. I don't subscribe to the idea that everyone gets a trophy and everyone is the best and everyone is first place, because that is just not life.
No,
it is not life.
Setting up for disappointment.
Totally.
Should we move on to teens?
Yes.
Because that's what I have
in
my house.
What are we in for, Tammy?
Right. Well, you know, little kids, little problems, big kids, big problems. But I actually wouldn't say that. I would just say that when I said that little kids are more physically exhausting because of just sleep and how physically you need to be watching them and tending to them.
Yeah.
Older kids, they take care of themselves. It's a beautiful thing, but it's more emotionally exhausting. Because of what they're navigating, that now you can no longer protect them, and that their very task of adolescence is for them to separate from you. And so their behaviors start to reflect that, even in the best of relationships. Mm-hmm. But without that, they would stay home, you know, watching Netflix on your couch forever. So
we don't want that.
You need them to do this becoming themselves and rejecting of you. So I like to say, and these are my words on this one, get your own life. You get your own life because your teens are getting theirs.
Oh my gosh. It's sad, but
that
true.
That hurts my heart a little bit.
I know. Just to think about it, because right now we're looking at our tiny little ones and thinking, no.
But to go back to these fun things I've been doing with my friends, if you look at it that way, I have more time.
Yeah.
And I have more freedom to do these things because I can actually leave my kids home alone now.
Yeah.
And I, you know, granted, I still want to be there for them, but building my own life rather than living through theirs or trying to solve their problems or even hear every detail of their life, is not going to be in their best service or mine. Yeah. So I need to seek out my own new endeavors, my own joy, and have some things that get me pretty excited, because when things do feel emotionally heart-wrenching just because they're frustrating, like their behavior is frustrating, then I want to be able to go and work on that thing I'm working on for Rise Gatherings, or whatever it is that has me really excited.
Yeah.
Because they aren't going to be the focal point of where I get my joy.
Yeah.
Because they're growing into the young people they're supposed to.
Yeah. And that must be, I don't know, does it ever feel surreal to you to like watch them and now they're grown up and they're like real little adults
every single day?
And like, do you see them as they were?
I see both. I see them as little children in themselves, of course, but I see the adults they're becoming. Yeah. My son is very tall. He's 14 and he's 6'4".
Oh,
so
wow.
I actually see him over my shoulder. Whoa. And there was a few times I thought there was an intruder in my house because I still don't expect him to look that big.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, it's my son. It's yes, definitely what you are saying for sure. You see and feel all of that. And I'm still a teenager in my own head. Mm-hmm. I don't recollect my childhood like I recollect my teenage years, but I remember very clearly the things they're going to be experiencing in these years.
And I remember that moment when my niece turned 9, thinking, because that was I remember being 9, so. Like, just thinking back, I can remember the feelings, I can remember the thoughts, whereas now I look at Claire, I can't remember being 1. So it was like this switch for me of seeing her as this person that I once was, or some connection in that way. So I can't even, as they become teenagers and you're remembering some of the things maybe you don't want to remember or don't want to think about them doing.
Yes. And that they're not going to become you 2.0. They're not going to be, you know, the same version of high school that you were, and you got to let them be them. But yes. Well, that what you just said, so this would be my other teenage recommendation. What you just said about you remember about your own teenage years. Yes. And I think most adults have those thoughts of like, I can't believe I did that. I can't believe either, because actually it's very embarrassing because you were like driving a golf cart down a hill or doing something stupid or like shoplifting and cheating and things that you really can't believe that morally you did. That was not you. This is leading into an understanding of teenage brain development. So that was you with a different brain. That was you without your prefrontal cortex, the executive functioning of your brain fully developed.
Yeah.
So that was not the same brain that you're thinking with now. You were operating without your executive functioning, without the CEO of your brain fully on board. Hmm. And
how long can I use that excuse?
Until your early 20s. So the World Health Organization defines the end of adolescence as early to mid 20s. So you've got a while. That's like college years included.
But I'm way past that.
I don't know about like 35, but you know.
So do you, when you are sort of parenting your children, how do you bring yourself back to that?
So I would encourage parents to learn about teenage brain development. So I professionally, it was a topic I was very interested in as a guidance counselor and in the work I did with teens and in educating parents about brain development and hormonal development and puberty. And even though we know they're going through it, when you really understand how it affects their behavior, it gives you a better understanding of this person living in your house and why they're acting that way. So, I mean, we could have a whole podcast about this, but I'll give an example, and I hope I'm remembering these right, but let's talk about boys and testosterone. Okay, so testosterone in the body before adolescence, let's say if it were coffee, it would be like you were having one cup a day. In adolescence, it increases 24-fold. That's the part I'm not sure if I have it right. I didn't prep that for this because it's just coming back to me now. But so that would be like having a gallon of testosterone a day for boys. If it was coffee, and now it's testosterone. So this is why boys are preoccupied with sex. And they say, like, for boys, it's sort of like the TV in the sports bar. It's always on in the background.
Yeah.
You know? And some of their behaviors, the moodiness and the irritability is because they have a gallon, with this analogy, of coffee, testosterone in their bodies.
So how can they focus on anything?
Exactly.
Oh my goodness.
It makes it very hard to focus. And there's so many like that. And girls and with estrogen and even just the body changes and what that brings up for them.
Yeah.
You know, I could go on and on. But what I would encourage people to do is get a couple good books about the teenage brain. Or read some articles, because it really does, when you equate it with biology and you realize it's not just your kid, it's
takes the personal
helps you
out
love
of it.
Them more.
Yeah. Maybe what we can do is link some of your favorite resources
I'd
in the
love
show
that.
Notes.
Sure.
Just because we might have some listeners out there who are headed.
Yeah,
in
a couple
that
books
direction.
In particular I could point you towards.
Well, excellent. So I think one of the last things that you wanted to talk about, and probably as you said, most important is taking care of ourselves. So what are your hacks for self-care?
So I touched on a few things, I think, leading up to this, because all these other things, health and happiness, come from putting yourself first. And that's the initial hack, is that, you know, if you don't take care of you, all the people in your life suffer, not just you. And
the oxygen mask metaphor.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. So it's the thing. So the hacky part is the signing up for that course or class or vacation or getaway that will feed your soul and help unlock and unleash the fullest potential that's within you. But you have to do that for you. And
it can be so tough to give yourself that permission, especially when you've got little ones.
Really is.
Yeah. I think as I think through the list, right, I am more apt to go do one of these other things that you mentioned that involves someone else first before I do anything for just me. It's just, I don't know if it's we're wired this way, or it's something that happens to you when you become a mom and you're just immediately second place in your mind. But it's tough, like you said, to just give yourself permission to do that, or to rationalize that it really is needed to be there for yourself, to be there for someone else.
But every time I do this, like I went to Rise last year when Claire was quite small. I do trips with girlfriends. Every time I come back, I feel like a better version of myself. I feel refreshed. I feel so excited to get back to my family. And I feel like I've kind of taken that deep breath that I didn't know I was holding.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it always feels great. So it's so valuable. It's just so hard to do.
Yeah.
I think in those moments, you're nobody but you. You don't have any responsibilities outside yourself. And you're not a mother, and you're not a friend, and you're not a coworker. You're not anything but just who you are in that moment.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things that we are, and I recommend to women, and that we are going to do a little campaign around Rise Gatherings, is YOLO Solo. That so we seek connection, right?
Yeah.
We seek community. So we want to sign up for everything with friends. But you can actually sometimes, when you show up by yourself, then you don't have to worry about, you know, is that friend having fun? Am I spending enough time with her? Or, you know, just deal with all the stuff that comes with other people, and really just have that experience for yourself and see how you show up in these places without your peeps. So if you can't get someone to sign up with you, don't let that discourage you. Maybe that's a sign.
YOLO Solo.
YOLO Solo. It.
Hashtag that immediately.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, you'll see that in some of our stuff. So a couple other things. And one is to do less. That's one of my.
How do you do that? Is there a hack for that?
Well, that's it. It's those two words. Sometimes it's the reminding yourself to do less, and what's important right now in this moment or in this day. And you see all the things that you planned for it and that you hope to get done. And then what can you click and drag or eliminate? And it's often we feel a sense of accomplishment by doing the little things because they're the low hanging fruit, you know, like, oh, I need to return that thing to this store and call this person back. And
Allison doesn't return anything.
I don't return anything.
That's how she does less. She buys things but never returns.
Okay.
That's the worst habit.
That's why you're so smiley. I'm serious. You're not burdened
by
the returns.
But that's her with less money.
much
You know
crap.
What? Just donate them.
Yeah. I know.
But she does.
Goodwill always hits the mother load with me.
There you go. That's a hack. Like these little things. Can you let them go? You know, can you not return it and donate
no,
it?
I have to return it.
Or can you ask your babysitter to return it for you and you'll pay her for an extra half hour? Like, is there a way to solve this without getting mired in the details? Is there a way for you to do less?
Yeah. Two things I was talking about with a girlfriend the other day that come back to this. One is don't glorify busy. Yes. Like being busy is something I feel like we're always like, whoa, my gosh, I've been rushing around all week. And so it's like taking that out of the equation and letting yourself have like those nothing times, but also saying no more. I think especially as women and women in the workplace, we're constantly wanting to volunteer for things and say yes to things. And so the ability to say, I might not have plans, but I like it that way. And so I'm just going to say no to everything for this little bit of time.
Yeah.
You're going to like this one. I don't know if this is real or my sister made this up, but she taught me JOMO.
JOMO.
It's the joy of missing out.
Oh, that's me.
Oh.
That is me.
It's not FOMO, the fear of missing out.
I don't know.
It's the JOMO. So it's the thing you said you were going to, and then you go, I'm actually not going to go.
I want to just be by myself. I want to take that bath or read that book or just. I have that.
JOMO.
No, I have a name for it. Yeah. Hashtag JOMO.
Hashtag JOMO. And I think the last thing I was going to say, I think you're psychic, is that you lead into everything I was thinking about saying, is that is about listening to the voice inside of yourself. We all have that voice, but there's a lot competing with it. So it's listening to your body, accepting all your feelings as real. We women have hormonal fluctuations that are very real, not just around our periods, but just around mood, and to pause and not just numb the feeling with food or whatever, you know, whatever it's going to be, Starbucks. Like what's really going on and what do I really need?
Yeah.
And then serving it to yourself the way you would to your best friend or to your son or your daughter or your loved one or your partner to give yourself that.
I like that one. A good last one to end on. I think we sometimes neglect ourselves in favor of others. So taking that step back.
For sure.
Yeah. This is how women are going to rise.
Yes.
You know, we're feeling the call for sure with all these different movements. But if we don't take care of the light within ourselves, then we're not going to be able to show up as activists, as professionals, as leaders. So it really is not a self-indulgent act. It's of service. Yeah. So that you can be that.
It's a really beautiful way to look at it.
Although I have a quote to leave you with. Our friend Jody's favorite quote is, your candle loses nothing by lighting another.
Yes, I love that quote.
And I feel like it's all applicable here.
Yes. So. Doesn't the flame is not diminished when you share it.
Exactly. Well, Tammy, this has been amazing.
Thank you. Having the opportunity
to walk through these. I mean, I feel like there's tangible things I'm walking away with, and just being able to chat with you about your background has been really phenomenal.
For sure. I think we're definitely taking things away from here, and we'll report back on how they work.
Yes.
Great. Same here. I love your podcasts, and I love your listeners because I know they show up for you. So they're like-minded people, and I hope to meet some of them at Rise Gathering.
Yes.
That would be wonderful.
We hope to meet some of them too.
We can have a crunchy cocktail podcast, little breakout
little circle.
Group. Or at least we should have a cocktail
mixology
hour.
Mixology and some conversation. And look, I almost finished my drink. It was so delicious.
Poor Tammy is not a huge fan of like liquor drinks, and I of course made her a liquor drink, but she's being a very good sport about it.
And I'm on my second.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you enjoying the cocktail and joining us. So again, thank you.
It's been my honor. Thank you.
So everything that we've mentioned today, including some of Tammy's recommendations, will be linked at crunchycocktailhour.com. Of course, you can find our drink recipe for today, our kombucha cocktail, at silverlinedandwine.com. And of course, give us a follow on social media. We're at Crunchy Cocktail Hour on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, everywhere. And subscribe if you like what you hear, and check us out every Friday with new episodes.
Bye, everyone.